Welcome to the Weekend Interview Show for February the 5th, 2005. The website is weekendinterviewshow.com. If you want to listen to the archives of any of the previous interviews, they're all there in MP3 format for you to stream or download. And I've got a few emails asking if it's okay to go ahead and burn copies of the interviews and give them away to friends. And, of course, the answer to that is go right ahead. The reason I do this show is to try to bring you guys the best information that I can in order that we may all oppose the warfare state more effectively, and whatever you feel like doing as far as passing out copies of previous interviews, please go right ahead. This is the Weekend Interview Show brought to you by Zoloft. Much less than half of our patients snap and kill their families. So check out Zoloft.com to learn all about that. We have a great show lined up for you today. The first guest will be Ivan Eland from the Independent Institute to talk about the way out of Iraq. In the second half hour, we'll be talking with Gordon Prather, nuclear expert, about Iran. And then in the second hour, we're going to bring Scott Ritter back to the show. We talked to him a couple of weeks ago, but he's a volunteer firefighter, and his pager went off to go put out a fire in the middle of the interview. So I'm going to bring Scott Ritter, the former UN weapons inspector, back on in the second hour today to go ahead and finish up that interview with him. Dr. Ivan Eland, I am informed, is now joining us on the telephone. Welcome to the show, Dr. Eland.
Thanks for having me back.
It's great to have you back, sir. Everybody, Dr. Ivan Eland is a former principal defense analyst at the Congressional Budget Office, investigator for the House Foreign Affairs Committee, and director of foreign policy studies at Cato. He is now the director of the Center on Peace and Liberty at the Independent Institute in Oakland, California, and is the author of the books Putting Defense Back into U.S. Defense Policy, Rethinking U.S. Security in the Post-Cold War World, and most recently, The Empire Has No Clothes, U.S. Foreign Policy Exposed. He's just written a new study for the Independent Institute called The Way Out of Iraq, Decentralizing the Iraqi Government. Now, Dr. Eland, many libertarians, including myself, like to go around saying, bring the troops home now. But you've actually sat down and come up with a plan to do just that.
Yes, well, the general problem, I think they're growing, not only libertarians, but Democrats and even some Republicans are now starting to ask when the troops are coming home. The only problem is that people haven't done a lot of thinking on, you know, how you get them home. And my general orientation here is that I'm trying to look at incentives and why are these insurgents fighting and how can we stop? Because you can have all the elections you want. In Vietnam, they had an election in 1967 where 83% of the Vietnamese, South Vietnamese, turned out in the South Vietnamese elections to vote. But, of course, that didn't stop the armed minority from the guys with the guns, that is, from eventually winning the war and turning the country to communism. So what you really have to do is not have the majority vote, but you have to get the armed minority to quit fighting. So therefore, you have to figure out why they are fighting. And I think they're fighting for two reasons. The president likes to call these people terrorists, criminals, and Saddam holdovers. And there are certainly some of those in the movement. But I think what's not recognized is that most of these are everyday average Sunnis, and they're being supported by the population and the Sunni population.
All right, Dr. Eland, I'm sorry, I got to hold you right there. We're about to go out to break. We'll be right back, everybody, with Dr. Ivan Eland from the Independent Institute. We'll be right back. right, everybody. Welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. The guest is Dr. Ivan Eland. He's the director of the Center on Peace and Liberty at the Independent Institute in Oakland, California. The website is independent.org and onpower.org. Now, sir, before the break, you were talking about how the administration has repeatedly made the claim that the insurgents are just bought-this dead-enders and criminals and terrorists, as opposed to any sort of nationalistic type of resistance. In fact, Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz testified to that effect in front of the Senate, I believe, 2 days ago.
Yeah, so they keep saying that, but I wouldn't say they're nationalists, but they're Sunni, if you want to call them Sunni nationalists. But really, we want to know why they're fighting. The first reason that they're fighting is to get the foreign invader out, and the second reason is because they're scared of paybacks from a Shiite government, because the Sunnis have ruled Iraq since the Ottoman Empire, and they have oppressed the Shia and the Kurds, the other two groups, and they're scared of that they're going to face retaliation for all those years that they oppressed the Shia. So my solution to the problem is to get the U.S. out fairly quickly, but before we leave, give the Iraqis genuine self-determination. Now, this election that we just had was, you know, really, they got to elect the leaders of the style of government that the U.S. wants, which is a U.S.-style federation. But federations don't have a history of working very well where there's ethnic and religious cleavages like there are in Iraq. So perhaps some sort of a looser confederation or partition of the country is the best thing. And I think true self-determination, I'm not going to say what the Iraqis would choose, but I think if you had a conclave of all the various groups and tribes in Iraq, much along the Afghan model, and allow them to come up with their own solution to the problem, I think you would see the Sunni violence decrease dramatically, because the Sunnis would, and all the other groups would not be concerned that somebody's going to try to grab the central government, the controls of the central government, and oppress the other groups, because that's what's really happened in Iraqi history. And if you have a weak central government and the security is provided by militias in the three different areas, or how many of the different areas they would come up with, then, of course, you don't have that problem. And I think it takes the some of the incentives out for the violence. And so I think the president could look pretty good if he adopted that. He could say, well, we went in, we overthrew Saddam Hussein, and then we allowed the Iraqis to have the best chance for peace and prosperity.
You wrote in your study that one of the problems with the federation angle is that even though perhaps a majority of people in Iraq sort of identify themselves as Iraqis before their ethnic or tribal identity, that the people who are the most organized and the best armed do not see it that way. And that's really the problem, is the very well-armed minorities who would rather put their own little sects first, right?
Right. Well, I mentioned the Vietnam experience, but there's another example, and that is Czechoslovakia. When it split up, originally, right after the Cold War ended, they did polls in both the Slovakia part of Czechoslovakia and the Czech part, and then both parts of the population, the majority of the population, wanted to stay together. But the leaders of the two republics wanted to split up, and so, of course, that's what eventually happened. The stronger, they didn't have guns in that case, but the politicians, the people who were politically organized, wanted separation. And I think in the case of Iraq, you do have guns involved. The Kurdish militia, first of all, I'm not sure exactly how much of a national identity they have. Some people, it depends on who you talk to, but certainly the Kurds have never wanted to be part of Iraq, and they've been autonomous for more than 15 years now, and so they would really like to be independent. They do not want to be part of Iraq. They would want partition, probably. Now, the Sunnis and the Shia, they might adopt some sort of a confederation. So it's possible that you could have a combination of these things. You could have a confederation between the Sunnis and the Shia, and then the Kurds might go their own way. But I think the Iraqi identity is weak even among the common people. And so I think, and each, as I mentioned, each of these has potent militias. And even in the Shia area, there are multiple militias. So we have all the ingredients of a civil war if this isn't handled correctly.
Well, in terms of creating a confederation with the very weakest central government, or perhaps no central government, and just having all of the powers reside in smaller states, I guess, within the Sunni, the Shia, and the Kurdish areas. I wonder about ethnically mixed cities like Baghdad. After all, this has been Iraq for 85 years now, and a city like Baghdad has different sections of town that are all different ethnicities. And I wonder about the problem that we saw in Yugoslavia, where people got, quote-unquote, stuck on the wrong side of the line, and it led to a lot of bloodshed.
Well, I think, that's a reasonable question. But I think, first of all, if you partition, which is the most extreme case, you don't necessarily have to make these areas contiguous with one another. They could be part of a state that they – I mean, you know, the United States has Alaska, Hawaii, Guam, Puerto Rico, U.S. Virgin Islands, and they're not contiguous with the continental United States. So – they don't necessarily have to be governed in contiguous areas. But also, that's why I leave open the possibility of a confederation. A confederation doesn't necessarily just have to have three areas. It could have, the cities could be their own autonomous region. And there's been a historical precedent for mixed ethnic cities to kind of be their own jurisdiction. So, you know, the people in the cities are more used to living with members of the other groups than people out in the countryside. So it's possible that you could have a Shia area, a Sunni area, and then mixed areas like Mosul and Baghdad as their own areas. So a confederation, might be the possibility there. But as I say, even partition, you don't necessarily have to have the areas contiguous with one another, the same ethnic group.
Would confederacy, are you concerned at all, open the door to meddling by Iraq's neighbors? You mentioned the Kurds and autonomy for them before, and I wonder if the Kurds really did get autonomy, would not the Kurds in Turkey try to break off and join the new Kurdistan? After all, we've been helping the Turks suppress their Kurds for a long time.
Yeah, I think that's been overstated simply because the Turks really want to get into the European Union, and some people say, well, if the Kurds break off from Iraq, that the Turks will invade immediately because they don't want their own Kurdish population, as you say, to go in league with the Iraqs and Iraqi Kurds and have a rump state. But I think this EU thing, the Turks really want this, and if they did any sort of belligerent action to their own Kurds or the Iraqi Kurds, you would see that evaporate immediately. Also, in the EU, you're required to have guarantee minority rights to get into the EU. And also, the Turkish Kurds will be much better off than the Iraqi Kurds because they'll be in the EU. So I think the Turkish or Kurds have less of an incentive now to separate and go with the Iraqi Kurds if Turkey gets into the EU, because there's a lot of economic benefits to being in the EU. And they'd be better off. And also, they've taken polls of the Turkish Kurds, and a majority don't want to leave Turkey now. And so I think that's been overstated. Now, there's also been the criticism that perhaps Iran will get too much influence over any Shia state. Now, I think Iran is already going to have influence, because it looks like at this point in time, we don't have the returns yet, but the Iranian oriented Shia parties under Ayatollah al-Sistani are winning at a 4-1 rate over the secular parties of Alawi. So I think Iran is going to have more influence, but we've kind of opened the can of worms. And I think, frankly, there are several reasons why the Iranians won't have as much influence as people say. First of all, Ayatollah al-Sistani is the most revered Shiite cleric in the world. And so actually the Iranian cleric may look up to him. And also we have the Shiite shrines are in Iraq, not Iran. So I think, frankly, the religious influence may flow the opposite way from Iraq to Iran. Also, the Iraqi Shiites are less prone to mix church and state. There is some still mixing of that, but they're not as hard line as the Iranian clerics. The Iraqi clerics don't believe that they should be actively involved in politics. They're going to have influence over the government, but I think there was a bit of a difference in church and state. And you also remember in the Iran-Iraq war, the Iraqi, those are both Shia populations. The Iraqi Shia sided with Iraq and not with Iran. So they, the Arabic versus Persian was juxtaposition was much more important than the fact that they were religious brothers. So I think there's Iran may gain some influence there, but I don't think it's going to be overwhelming.
Besides the Sistani-Chalabi list, it looks like the Communist Party did pretty good in the election this time, too.
Well, you know, the Communists are always very organized, and they also, you know, have a very distinct point of view. So, you know, the Iraqi Communists have always been a strong force before they were wiped out by Saddam. So it's not surprising that they still have some roots in Iraq.
It's the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Scott Horton, and the guest is Dr. Ivan Eland from the Center on Peace and Liberty at the Independent Institute in Oakland. We're talking about his independent policy report, The Way Out of Iraq, Decentralizing the Iraqi Government, and we'll be right back. My friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. The guest is Ivan Eland from the Center on Peace and Liberty. And for brevity's sake, this is not the complete quote, but the omitted is not contradictory. This is from George Bush and Brent Scowcroft's book. They said, "Trying to eliminate Saddam would have incurred incalculable human and political costs. Apprehending him was probably impossible. We would have been forced to occupy Baghdad and, in effect, rule Iraq. There was no viable exit strategy we could see. Had we gone the invasion route, the United States could conceivably still be an occupying power in a bitterly hostile land." Well, Dr. Eland has come up with an exit strategy, decentralizing the Iraqi government, creating a confederacy with a central government so weak that the different ethnic and religious factions in that country will be less likely to fight over it after the United States leaves. Now, Dr. Lin, we only have a couple of minutes left here, but I want to ask you about Israel. You say in your report that a decentralized Iraq would be good for Israel, but my question is, doesn't that make the U.S. look even worse?
Well, I think, frankly, if you're saying do we excessively support Israel in this country, I would agree with you totally. But I think given the fact that Israel is a domestic factor in this country, it is a selling point. It's more of a political selling point than anything else that this is not going to be detrimental to the security of Israel. And in fact, Israel has long given up that this was going to turn out well for the U.S. and has started training.
You say in the report that they decided
because they're figuring that this country may break up.
You say in your report that they decided in the summer of 2003 that the American plan was hopeless and they started their own operation then.
Yes, and they have long given up, as you point out, on that. And so I think this is not a primary – this is not my primary reason for doing this, because I think one of the reasons that this was this invasion was conducted was to help Israel eliminate Iraq, which was one of Israel's few remaining enemies. Of course, Iraq was contained, and this was unnecessary. But in that we've done that, I don't think it necessarily harms Israel, because I think Israel would rather have a partitioned country than one run by the parties that are going to win this election.
On a broader topic, Dr. Eland, I gather from reading your columns that you really tend to be just for non-intervention pretty much all the way around. And I wonder whether you would agree that it seems to me that the free markets and democracy, quote-unquote, that America is spreading all around the world is not really free markets and democracy. It's mercantilism and tyranny of the majority. And it's hard to imagine that anybody in the world is really going to want that from us.
Well, I think that's an excellent point. First of all, as we were talking before, I think just because you have an election, that can be tyranny of the majority. What you really need is to have not just a democracy, but a liberal democracy, and that is rights for the minority. And that's very key here because the Sunnis are very scared that they're going to get paybacks from the Shia government. So just because we have elections, that doesn't mean that these parties coming in, if they institute an Islamic state, the rights of women and others are going to be infringed, etc. And also, I think we have a problem in we can be an example of freedom, an example of free markets, but when we take our show on the road at gunpoint, democracy becomes discredited because even if it doesn't fail in Iraq, it's regarded as not democracy so much as a foreign intruder bringing its way of life at gunpoint. And frankly, democracy and free markets need to bubble up from underneath to be sustaining. And we haven't done that here. And we're Bush administration is very impatient. I think many Democrats would like to take democracy on the road, and because the Clinton was guilty of this too to some extent. That we want to democratize the world, and we want free markets around the world, and we want it right now. But it takes time, and I think if we don't pollute our own democracy, because every time we go to war, of course, we erode our own liberal democracy here at home. And so there are many reasons why we should be an example, lead by example, as we did in Eastern Europe when the wall came down. The people were inspired by our example, and I think that was the success story. We should look at that. Unfortunately, when we invade another country and implant the system, it's kind of like South Africa, where capitalism was unfairly associated with the apartheid system. And I think in this case, democracy is being unfairly, well, maybe not unfairly in this case, but associated with an armed invasion. So I think we're better off just leading by example, and I think that's what the founders of this country, Jefferson and Washington, would have wanted to do.
It's sort of like the World Trade Organization, which is really a global management of trade, being opposed by the radical left, which believe that the problem is free trade, not the global management of trade.
Well, I think you're right. It's better to just have free trade without all the bureaucracy and management and that sort of thing. So we see that, that's another thing in Iraq, is we're not really, we're kind of regarded as hypocrites because we ended local elections in the Shiite portions of Iran when we realized that the candidates the United States didn't want were going to win. And then also we've shut down press that...
All right. I'm sorry, Dr. Elin. We're all out of time. I want to thank you for coming back on the show, everybody. Ivan Elin, look him up at onpower.org.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.